like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Cheryl Brady, founder and owner of Vet Care Express Ambulance, which is designed to help pet owners, emergency vet clinics, veterinarians, humane societies, and other entities in situations where an animal is injured or severely ill, and time is of the essence for medical treatment. Brady started the company in 2010, and since then it has steadily expanded so that it now serves Manatee, Sarasota, Pinellas, Hillsborough, and Pasco counties. Vet Care Express Ambulance's mission parallels that of Ambulance Services for Humans to provide compassionate professional transport service, ensuring that the patient is handled correctly from the outset by trained professionals using the proper equipment. We'll discuss what prompted Brady to launch the service, how vet care has evolved and expanded, some notable cases, and more when I speak with Cheryl Brady in a moment here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Kerrigan Lane, a 16-year-old advocate who recently started a petition asking the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, to investigate and potentially close the Baton Rouge Zoo, citing the fact that 21 animals have died there this year. Her petition has gathered more than 140,000 signatures. Also later in the program is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, though, let's meet Cheryl and hear about Vet Care Express Ambulance, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ. Actually, I should quickly point out at the moment our phones seem to be down, so we can't take calls, but we're happy to hear from you by email at dj@wmnf.org, or, of course, by text at 813-433-0885. And with that in mind, let's welcome Cheryl Brady to Talking Animals. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Duncan. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. And there's a lot to cover about Vet Care Express Ambulance, but among the things that are interesting about this enterprise is that you came to it after other careers. So let's hear something of the Cheryl Brady story that precedes the Vet Care Express saga. What were you doing before launching the ambulance service?
Well, you know, when I was in college, way back, I was a pre-vet student, and I actually had thought of this ambulance way back then. But I did the normal thing, went off into careers. I was in sales careers. I was in business development management. I was a volunteer firefighter. And I did well in those careers, and I liked those careers. I liked helping people, but I just always had this nagging that I wasn't in the right place, in the right place that God had put me on this earth for. So as I went along, I always did my best in the careers I was at, but I was always searching and praying and thinking for, you know, show me what it is that I'm supposed to do. And finally, around 2008 or so, I called it my personal epiphany. It became clear to me exactly what it was that I was supposed to do. And I had a compelling event where a friend had hit a dog. And when I went out to help her and to possibly help the dog, I was starting to think, where's the closest animal hospital? How would I properly handle the pet? How can I be trained to properly handle the pet? Where can it go? And literally light bulbs went off. And right then and there, as soon as I knew, I just knew immediately. And then I remembered about the paper I had written 30 years ago. So I went home and started researching immediately, and was just shocked to find out that it didn't exist. It didn't exist anywhere in the States. So it was very surprising to me. And I just knew that that's what I had to do. You know, didn't know how it was going to work, didn't know whether it was going to work, didn't know whether there was a need for it, although internally I just, I certainly felt there was a need for it. So I spoke to a lot of emergency hospitals and veterinarians and said, hey, do you believe there's a need for this service? And just went around and introduced myself and told them this is what I'm working on. So stayed in corporate America for another 2 years.
And in what capacity at that point?
I was a business development executive in office product sales.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So every weekend I was just researching, training.
So you were already restless probably even before the epiphany, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was for a period of the restlessness just built, and
yeah.
And the president, just show me, I'll do whatever it is.
But you knew at that point, what I'm doing now is not it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And when the light bulbs went off, I started crying and I just knew that this was it. And throughout the first, cause they were difficult months, difficult years, because you're questioning, did I hear right? Am I listening right? Am I just wishing for something? The people that I had helped during that time, and they didn't know my whole story. But the people I helped during that time, they're like, Cheryl, I don't know how this is going to work out, but you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So throughout the early years, early months, I was constantly given reinforcement that, yes, it was needed, and that I was doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing, and I just needed to keep doing it, and it would work out. And all the time, I'm serving my purpose.
No, I could see how there'd be a lot of questioning. I mean, anytime, of course, you switch careers or switch gears, there's some of that. But it's not like you were switching from business development as an executive to some slightly adjacent thing. If you're saying, right, I'm going to go from that to something that otherwise, as far as I know, does not exist,
right,
that's got to be a much bigger leap.
Right. Yeah. It was a huge leap. And it was also, I felt, because I wanted to run it like human ambulances do. I wanted to be available 24, 365, 7 days a week. I didn't feel like, if you're going to serve and you're going to serve this purpose and you're going to be available for whenever anybody needs you, then you have to be available. You can't be available 8 to 5, 9 to 5.
Yeah, we're close.
Or not on weekends. I made the leap and didn't do it part time. And again, in the early months, so you're also talking about walking away from security, comfort,
right,
well-paying job to, I don't even know if this is going to work. I just knew that I needed to do it.
Yeah.
So,
and there's probably not a way when some people make those kinds of shifts, there's a way they can kind of pursue some stuff on the weekend or go, work out some sort of arrangement with their work where they kind of can fudge that transition, but this didn't lend itself to that at all.
Yeah.
You had to go feet first or not at all, pretty much.
Yeah. And I have a funny story about that. I did, when you get 4 or 5 months into it, and yes, I was getting some calls and getting some, but you you have these fears. You still have families to support and
sure.
And you want to be smart while you're doing it. So I did have an opportunity and was offered a position, to work in the afternoons, a part-time, maybe 1-ish to 5, 6 o'clock. So I'm like, well, I could probably do that because the majority of my calls were in the morning because we transfer pets that have had emergency care back to their regular veterinarians for continuing care.
Sure.
So I said, well, I can probably do that. And then if I need to have somebody else be able to run the ambulance, you're looking for that security, that sense
sure.
of security.
Yeah.
So while I was there during that interview, which was again during that same time period, early afternoon, I had 4 different calls. Mm. So I just looked up. I said, really? Again, I had my answer. This is going to work out. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep working hard. Keep living the purpose that I've given you. And this will all work out, and it has.
And there's no modified version of
there's no modified
that one afternoon made clear, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that since you had many moons ago pursued, or at least were studying to be a vet tech. So I'm going to guess that some of this impulse, the epiphany, is connected to being a longstanding animal lover. I mean, have you always been an animal person?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you grew up with animals. Animals were important to you as a kid and your family and stuff.
Yeah.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Maryland.
Okay.
Yep. I'm a Maryland Terrapin, University of Maryland graduate. Got to get a plug in for the terrapins.
Sure.
But always an animal lover and always more towards the medical side, the veterinary side of it. The firefighting side of it. I loved being a firefighter as well, but that was when I was searching. You said during the searching period, that's when I was also searching. And I was to the point of frustration of trying to find exactly where I was supposed to be, to where I knew that was close, but not exactly it. So
that's funny. 'Cause now if we know what you're doing now, which we do, if you sort of reverse engineer it, it makes a lot of sense, right? If you were an animal lover, you were kind of drawn towards vet tech, but then fire paramedic, I mean, based on what we're discussing here today mainly, I mean, it makes perfect sense, even if it was a struggle and tricky to get there.
Exactly. I tell people, if you add up all of my careers, the pieces of them all put together is what creates this.
They were all pointing to this, really, in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Cheryl Brady, founder and owner of Vet Care Express Ambulance, a service that can transport an animal that's injured or severely ill in times of the essence for medical treatment. If you'd like to ask Cheryl a question or offer a comment, we can't, unfortunately, take calls at the moment, but we're happy to have emails at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So when you first began and you were first taking those steps, where exactly were you? Where were you based when you first launched the service?
I was based in Bradenton,
okay.
And I'm still based in Bradenton. I serve both Manatee and Sarasota counties. And I first approached the emergency hospitals that were in my immediate vicinity. At the time, we only had two at that time, one in Manatee County, one in Sarasota County. Now we're blessed with five between the two counties, two of those being 24-hour critical care centers. So I worked with the emergency hospital and, just on what equipment do you think would be best? Where do you think the need is? How can I help you? You know, I spent time, volunteering with them a little bit, and just working through it, building relationships, letting all the vets know that we are there, so that they could also share the information with their clients. And that's the main thing. We're here. We're already doing it. So we just want people to be aware that we're here. Because it's funny, I have people, even the people that were some of my biggest supporters, until you're in a crisis, you can't kind of imagine why you would need that, because most people are, okay, well, large dog or elderly or don't have a car or things like that. But I've had so many people, and since then, again, a lot of my biggest supporters from the beginning were like, Cheryl, I knew what you did. I didn't quite understand the gravity of what you do until they had their own crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's one of my closest friends now, but she had a 12-year-old, and it's a small terrier, and she could always take her to the vet. But one day she started seizuring. She was having neurological issues. So she, got her in her car and she has her on the passenger seat and she's crying, just, horribly crying and upset and worried, and she can't comfort her pet and she's trying to keep a hand on the pet. So now she's dangerous driving. So for all the same reasons that we call human ambulances, I tell people, this is why you would call, Vet Care Express, to help you with your pets. And she called me that night right away, and she says, I get it. I didn't, I understood before, but I didn't get it before. And she said, I had no business driving that car. I wanted to just comfort, my pet. I couldn't do that. I couldn't drive right. So she wasn't doing anything really, well. And she put them more at risk, and she had realized that. So that's one example of how people understand afterwards.
That's interesting, because that's one of the things I was going to get into at some point, because I wondered if part of the sort of less obvious immediately virtue of this is exactly that scenario where something bad happens, an animal gets hit by a car or a seizure, something very dramatic in one way or another. So as that pet's person, you're kind of freaking out. You're upset, and you don't know what to do, and you're panicking. You know, you got to get to the vet or get somewhere quickly, but you're obviously not operating at the height of your own powers. And so, yeah, I wondered how compromised people might be in that situation relative to having someone come and say, look, we'll take care of it. We'll transport that dog or cat or whoever. And you're in good hands, and you can just kind of relax or continue to freak out if that's what you need to do.
But
at least, you know, the animal will safely get where they need to be.
Yeah, and it's a comfort to the pet, too. I've had a lot of owners say, Cheryl, it's just having somebody that's trained, experienced, has a proper equipment. They said that I actually helped them more than they felt that I had even helped the pet because they were so distraught and upset.
Yeah.
I mean, even me, I'm trained. I teach pet CPR, but your adrenaline's running and one of your loved ones is hurt and sick and needs your help. You know, and a big part of it, you said you're wondering where you go. That's a big part of it, too.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Who's open, who's not open. We'll get people that know where the closest ER is, but they may not know that ER is not open 24 hours. So, knowing where to go, how to get there, how to properly handle the pet, you know, the protocols for human ambulances is if there's a suspected back or neck injury, or if you don't know what's wrong and the human's down or collapsed, you know, they keep them all in a line, they support their head. It's exactly the same for the pets. You know, we don't know what's wrong. So handling them correctly is 99% of the battle. If you've got a big dog, you know, for example, a big dog that has collapsed, you have no idea what's wrong. And if you handle them in the incorrect manner, you can make a lot of things a lot
exacerbate
worse.
Exacerbate, whatever.
Yeah,
the...
Not to mention, you know, put them in distress. And nobody wants to hurt their pet. Nobody does. So that's a big part of what we do as well.
I'm sure. Just to back up, I was curious when you talked about first going around, and it sounds like you're sort of drawing on your business background when you were first meeting people, introducing yourself, saying, hey, how can I help you? Sort of networking, as we might call it. To what extent were some people, when you first approached them, thinking, okay, are you nuts? What are you talking about? An ambulance service for? I mean, were there some sort of naysayers or people who just thought, well, this seems a bit?
That's a great question, because in the beginning, it was, other than my closest loved ones, it was almost all naysayers. You know, except in the veterinary field, in the emergency veterinary field, they understood. They had hoped that somebody would come along and be able to, stick with it. And provide the level of service that they also expect and need for their patients. You know, the veterinary community is, they want to make sure that their patients are all handled, kindly and with the most expert hands as well. So that was a trust that I had to build up and had to create. That doesn't happen overnight. But that's how this has grown, through word of mouth and how they see that we have helped their patients. But even friends, I mean, there were, you don't want to say you lost friends over it, but I mean, there were, it was mostly naysayers, people, and nuts was the word. I mean, are you crazy? What are you doing? Are you sure? The loved ones said, are you sure?
The other ones were nicer, but secretly that translated to is, are you nuts, right?
Yeah.
But are you sure, man? Are you nuts in that case? Well, that's the thing. Anytime anybody comes up with something unusual or a bit visionary or whatever, I mean, that's often the response. So I just anticipated that those early days were filled with supportive people, but people who are kind of giving you the rolling eye thing or the polite, good luck with that.
Why would I need that?
And
again, the assumption of, only the elderly or large dogs or what could possibly be the reason for that. There are just so many reasons. Like I said, for all the same reasons that you would call a human ambulance. You know, people are anxious, nervous. They just need help. People just want help with their pets. And that's exactly what we do.
Sure. Well, we got some emails here. Let's read one of them. One says, they park at the end of my street at night. I assume they mean the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful to know they exist and hopefully never need her services. So
We hear that. We hear that a lot too, and that's okay. I hope you never need our type of services in an emergency as well.
Sure.
We're non-emergency. Some people may not realize that. We're non-emergency as well. We have a lot of people. I've got a lot of repeat clients that they may have disabilities. They may not be comfortable driving. They may not be able to both handle their pet themselves. You know, people with big dogs, elderly people with big dogs, they pull too hard. Elderly people with cats, they can't afford to take a chance on the cat maybe scratching or biting them, or they can't capture them. So we do a lot of non-emergencies as well. So, but we just want people to know we're here.
In those very first days in Bradenton, you've waved whatever gesture is at the naysayers, and you've gone ahead and launched mm-hmm. this thing, and it's going, but it's pretty much just you, I believe, mm-hmm. in the very yeah. early days. So in what ways did it meet your expectations in those early days? I mean, how much was it kind of like, this is what I picture, relative to, wow, I kind of am a little surprised by this, or I wasn't really anticipating that?
For the most part, it exactly met my expectations, because I didn't really have a lot of expectations. I just had this urging that knew I had to do that, mm-hmm. you know, and I had to adjust and be available to be able to provide this type of service. There was a lot of learning, maybe some between the veterinary hospitals and the way that it worked, the way that the industry worked and who worked with who, and the referral part of it. But, you know, but that's all normal. That's just business. I find one of the biggest things that has helped me was my business experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in business development for 12 years. So that helped to understand a lot of the business part.
Sure.
And had I not had that part and just had the firefighting and the vet tech, and, you know, it's still, I don't believe it would have worked. I think it was all of them put together. You know, it doesn't really happen in our time. We think we're in control of this, but that's, you know, it doesn't really happen in our time. So with all of it together is what has helped it succeed. So part of it helped me to understand if I didn't understand something, that I needed to work with it and you know, we would get to where we needed to be.
So it sounds like in the early days, your kind of expectations were pretty much met spot on. But when did you realize, hey, this is going to work? This is going to be successful. Was there a certain moment or a certain case or just maybe a accumulation of things that you thought, okay, this I was onto something and it is going to work and I'm off to the races here?
Yeah, really when I was busy. You know, whenever I was busy, I was happy.
Yeah.
Whenever the phone may not ring, for whatever reason, the ERs that have been established for 20 years are the same way. For whatever reason, you might have a day where the phone doesn't ring at all.
Yeah.
You know, so you start hearing the screams in the back of your head, you know, what did I do wrong? What's wrong? But it's just the way that the industry works, and it's emergency services. So, you know, you're not always going to be, sometimes now the phone's always ringing, but I was happy as long as I was helping people and the phone was ringing. And then I start getting emails and calls from across the country of people, probably after the second year, of people that want to start the same type of service. And now I see that some of them are happening. You know, I'll get Facebook messages that there are somebody will try to start an ambulance in one state or another. So, you know, people have realized the need for it. And I guess, you know, maybe they see some of our success. But I was happy and felt like it was working as long as I was busy.
A couple other emails here. One, she says, does she have paid employees or volunteers?
We have a combination of both. I have a lot of people that want to volunteer for us, but I respect their time. And, you know, I know that it's difficult to make time. So I pay my folks, and all of us pay our folks, just because we believe that you know, that's the right thing to do. But we have people that want to volunteer all the time, and there may be some positions that may evolve that that may require some volunteers. You know, we do a lot of events and shows, and a lot of people like to help us in that, to pass out information. Some of the, we write thank you cards to everybody and sympathy cards. And, you know, so some of those may, if people want to do that on a volunteer basis, they certainly can. But we prefer to pay people.
And what kind of background or training would someone be required to have to either volunteer or, as it turns out, probably be paid by vet care?
Yeah, we require, of course, some type of animal handling, some type of animal background, but everybody has to be certified in pet CPR first aid, and then they all have to get trained specifically on our ambulances. The first thing I do is I ask people to ride with us, because there are a lot of people that have ridden, and some fall in love with it, and some after 4 hours on the ambulance, they're, oh no, that's not what I thought it was. That's not what
let me out at the corner
you know,
here. Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Some people can't deal with the pet owner being upset. Some of them can't deal with the pet being upset. You know, they get caught up in the feel good,
sure,
because we do, you know, we do great work and we do help a lot of animals and we help a lot of people, but you still have to do the work. So some people don't like the fact that there's no set schedule. You know, there's just, you just never know what's going to happen on any given day. So we make people ride with us first, because we want it to be a good fit for the employee, just like it's a good fit for us, because we're, you know, we demand the highest of service for our patients.
For sure. So let's talk a little bit about those ambulances. First, let me just, again, let people know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, if you're just tuning in. My guest is Cheryl Brady, founder and owner of VetCare Express Ambulance, a service that can transport an animal that's injured or severely ill. We invite you to participate in the conversation. Unfortunately, we can't take calls today, or at least at the moment, but happy to receive emails at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. First of all, before we maybe ask you to describe the ambulances and sort of walk us through what's inside, in expanding, because you're now in Manatee, Sarasota, Pinellas, Hillsborough, and Pasco counties, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how do you determine at what point, as that expansion has occurred, an additional ambulance is necessary to properly serve that constituency and still maintain what you have been offering before?
Yeah, the level of service. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great question. You know, a lot of times we're more equipped than what the calls are demanding. You know, certainly starting in an area like now, until we get the word out and get the hospitals all on board. And but in terms of adding a vehicle on, if there are occasions where either a territory takes us too long to get to, or we may be getting multiple calls at the same time. The way, and this is kind of the way I had envisioned it, it's kind of morphing into, of course, we'll have emergency calls overnight, and we'll have emergency calls throughout the weekend. But we do majority of our calls in the morning, because people will wake up and one of their dogs or cats will be in distress. They'll notice that. And we also do transports back from the emergency hospitals back to the referring vets. So that gets to be a busy time. And the other time now, the pattern that's emerging is that in the afternoon, as regular vets, family vets are starting to close, they'll have pets that need ongoing emergency observation overnight. So we also do those transports. So if we're starting to get too many calls at the same time, or in those golden hours is kind of what we call it, then we look at adding an additional vehicle.
I see.
Okay,
I see.
And people, personnel, obviously.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about the ambulances themselves. Kind of just give us a little verbal guided tour of the inside and how they're outfitted and what they can do.
Yeah, the ambulances actually are human ambulances that we've purchased through various means, usually through auction. We find one that fits our needs best, and that we can be comfortable in trusting, you know, the quality of them. If you get them from fire departments, you know that they've been maintained every 3,000 miles and they're, you know, great maintenance records. So that tends to be what we look for, because, you know, like anybody, we can't break down. We can't let our, you know, safety is our number one priority, so we can't let our patients down. So we look for human ambulances, you know, the big ones, and we retrofit them. We'll cut out some of the human benching, some of the human parts, and we will put in an extra large cage, And some of our vehicles have two embedded large cages, an extra large and a large one. Some of them will have a fold-down cage. What I like most about our vehicles is we can configure it in any manner that we need to. So all of our cages will break down. They're all safety clamped in, but we can break them down should we need to configure it in a different manner. You know, if we have a couple of pets that or need specific cages or don't need specific cages. Some of them don't like to go in a cage, or we don't want to overhandle them. Not overhandling them is of the utmost importance. So there are some that'll be out in the open space with an attendant with them or in a stretcher. We have specially made gurneys that wheel right into the back of each ambulance. The legs go down as we come out, and then they fold down as we push the stretcher back into the ambulance, the gurney and stretcher back into the ambulance, so that we're not overhandling the pets. So it goes in and out just like a human stretcher does. We have pet oxygen masks, all pet first aid equipment, GPSs. We use Google Maps a lot, especially during season, so we have tools again to be able to provide the highest level of service to get this pet where it needs to be quickly.
This might dovetail with a question I sort of had in mind, and in a way you've kind of answered it, at least bits and pieces as we've talked here, but I was just going to offer sort of a short hypothetical. Let's say a dog, let's say it's a lab, gets hit by a car and the injuries seem really serious, pretty serious. Mm-hmm. Outline how that injured dog being transported to a vet or emergency clinic, maybe by VetCare Express, is better served or may have better outcomes than if someone did what we all have done or thought we've had to do, which is grab the dog, put it in the car, and race to wherever the seemed
right.
Like the proper place.
Right. So say a lab has been hit by a car. Somebody would call us. We would get to the scene. We would assess the dog. We would, we would check its gums. We would go through the normal assessments. We would check the color of its gums, see if there's any obvious more internal injuries, see how it's breathing, see if there's any fractures, see what trauma there is to the dog. And we would carefully, and we've been trained to do this with our equipment, we would carefully get that dog onto a stretcher and then onto the gurney, into the back of the ambulance, and we would know exactly where to go. We would know the closest ER. We would be on the phone with the ER. We would tell them what we have, what's going on. We may get an oxygen mask. We would most likely get an oxygen mask on a hit by car because, if anything, it could be getting shocky. Mm-hmm. Probably is getting shocky. Maybe bleeding internally. Most likely is bleeding internally, and then, of course, have fractures. So that versus an owner or, a good Samaritan or somebody that's not trained or doesn't have the equipment, they're basically just kind of picking the dog up as best they can. Dog's probably screaming, upset, bleeding, maybe getting blood on the car, maybe urinating because of the trauma. So you could be making fractures worse. You could be making, if a lot of times the bladders will get ruptured, you could be making internal injuries worse. The owner, whoever's driving, is, their heart must be racing at 200 beats per minute, and nervous and anxious. And then on top of all that, not sure where they're going.
Yeah.
We actually had a case like that. We had a gentleman call. He called after he had gotten the dog into the back seat. And I said, well, if you've already gotten the dog in the back seat, you need to go. And he goes, no, I'm not sure. And I don't know how to handle him. I want to, I just want the experts on hand.
Mm.
So we went, got the dog off the back seat onto a stretcher. And it did have a severe fracture on one of its rear legs, and got to the ER. We got an oxygen mask on it and we got it to the ER. So, he had already had it in the back seat, but the dog was losing oxygen and had a fracture and probably had screamed, and the guy was too nervous, too anxious to drive.
Yeah.
So that's really the difference.
Sure. No, that's significant. So I got a couple questions here. One that I think I can anticipate the answer, but it ties into the scenario we just discussed. This one says, can your transporters use lights and siren during emergencies?
Right. We cannot use lights and sirens. No. Again, I see this evolving. Do I see us running red lights or anything? No, I don't really ever see it evolving like that. I would like to at some point in time. you know, maybe white strobe lights, something. Because when people do see that we have an emergency on board, they're getting out of our way. They want to get out of our way.
Sure.
They want us to be able to get that pet
help that
somewhere
animal.
Quicker. Yeah. So we had a gunshot wound one time, and people were pulling over, and they're like, run the light. You know, we can't do that. We're here to be safe. We're here to follow all the laws. Fire and police, they're our friends. We have to do everything correctly and by the law. So there may be some yellow lights that we, you know, take a chance on if something's mm-hmm. going bad
okay.
in the back, you
yeah.
know, but we're still not running any lights now, and we can't use lights and sirens.
I gotcha.
Parades, yeah. They're great during parades, but other than that, we can't use them on the roads.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we're sort of in the final minute or two of our time here, Cheryl, but let me read at least one more of the other emails or texts that have come through. One just says, this is terrific to know about. Actually, the subject line is, what a great service. And this is terrific to know about. Can't imagine how many lives have saved. Thanks. And so that brings me to, in a way, just in sort of our remaining time here, maybe share a success story or two of sort of building on my hypothetical about the lab or whatever, like some things where being transported by VetCare Express ambulance really made a difference to a given animal or an outcome.
Yeah, I've got several stories like that, but one of the ones that really jumps out is it was on Thanksgiving Day, probably close to 3 years ago now. I get a call. A gentleman was visiting from Atlanta. He was down visiting his son in Winter Haven, which we don't normally serve simply because it's so far from Bradenton. But his Yorkie went into severe respiratory distress. He had gotten the Yorkie to a critical care center in Lakeland, but the Yorkie had a collapsed trachea. So she could not be out of oxygen for even a minute. She would start to turn blue and purple. She, you know, would lose her oxygenation. So he called me, and he was crying. He was beside himself. That, again, it's Thanksgiving morning. And he said, you know, Cheryl, she's 5 years old. I can't put this dog down. You know, we simply need a surgery. They need to get to a specialty center for surgery. He thought the only one was in Gainesville. I said, well, have you tried Tampa? There's one in Tampa that I thought would certainly fit his needs. And he says, well, let me call them. I said, if they'll do the surgery, we will come up to Winter Haven. We'll take her and we'll get her over to Tampa. Simply because, again, and our thinking is, what gives the pet the best chance?
Sure.
I was real concerned about her survival to Gainesville. We had her on oxygen, but still, that is a long trip. So we wanted the shortest trip, support her fully on oxygen, and get her to the best possible facility. So he was able to arrange a surgery, and we went up to Winter Haven. We picked her up, got her over to Tampa. She had surgery at night, and by 8 o'clock that night, you know, she was a new dog. She was going to survive. Without that surgery, she would not have survived. Mm-hmm. And the critical care center, just on oxygen, could no longer support her sufficiently. You know, she needed the surgery ASAP, and there was just no other way. And she would not have made the trip without oxygen, without that support. So that's, I call that a very thankful Thanksgiving. That's the way we spent Thanksgiving that year, but that was okay by me.
Nice.
You know? So it went very, very well. And we're still friends today. He still sends
sure.
me pictures
yeah.
of her. And, you know, so that's just a crystal clear example of,
yeah.
of the difference that it makes.
So we're actually a little bit over our time, but let me just ask one quick question that popped up in email, which I think is a very good question. Do any of the pet insurance companies cover the ambulance service?
We are beginning to speak to some of the pet insurance companies, but what we've found, if the hospital puts the transport on their bill, which a lot of our hospitals will do, then and make it part of the necessary care, then the insurance company covers it.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So there's a way to get there, to finesse it. Yeah. And we should just quickly add that, again, we are able to talk about prices or cost of things here on WMNF. But I will say, having looked into this, that what you would think and what you're hearing about, the prices for the ambulance service are less than one would expect. So you could, let me just give the website, is vetcareexpress.com, and they're also, of course, active on Facebook. And you could just call or otherwise communicate with them to get a quote, basically, of what their services might involve.
Yeah, and we tell people, you know, people ask for a set price, and it's just it's really a quote business. You know, we don't want to overprice anybody if it's a simple cat capture, or if you're going to a vet for a non-emergency just 5 miles away. But it's much less than what people perceive because we are out in the real ambulances. And I know that people think, you know, well, that's going to cost an arm and a leg. But our main thing is get these pets the proper care, and we worry about the payment afterwards.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Cheryl Brady from Vet Care Express Ambulance. Once again, the website is vetcareexpress.com, and you can just search for them as well on Facebook. Thanks so much, Cheryl, for joining us in studio, no less, on Talk Animals. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Duncan, for having us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. In a moment, I'll have a brief conversation with 16-year-old Kerrigan Lane, who started a petition asking a division of the USDA to investigate and potentially close the Baton Rouge Zoo in the wake of 21 animals dying at the facility this year. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. Jim Gaffigan has long been a Talking Animals favorite, and we're going to hear something from him now. Manatees are often on our mind here in Florida, and one was just in the news when it got caught in a crab trap in Safety Harbor. With that in mind, this is a portion of a piece called I'm a Manatee from Jim Gaffigan in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals.
My favorite animal is the manatee, the sea cow. The manatee is endangered with extinction, and I think it's because it's out of shape. Looks like a retired football player. You see the manatee on the Discovery Channel? It's always floating around like, I'm bloated. Too much pizza for me. The manatee is also called the sea cow. Sea cow, that sounds like an insult. It's almost as if the manatee was introduced to the ocean, the other animals were like, who's the new guy? The manatee was like, oh, hi, everyone. You can call me the manatee. Yeah, right, sea cow.
Name's Manatee.
Sea cow, fat ass.
Quit it.
I'd love to see the manatee on a show like Ricky Lake. The manatee be sitting there like, Ricky, I'm here because I'm endangered. And then one of those mean people in the audience would offer up the advice, yeah, I want to say something to the sea pig. That sea cow, whatever. Sea pig, you a fat seal. You got to get yourself an education and a job. And he'd be like, I live in the ocean. Just so happen you live in the ocean because you ain't got no job. You got to get in Weight Watchers, some kind of program.
I have a layer of blubber to keep my body warm in the water.
Whatever, talk to the hand.
I don't have a hand.
What if a manatee was in the audience? They might laugh, but they'd be crying on the inside. It doesn't look like God tried that hard on the manatee, does it? He's like, all right, blood flip-flops. What the hell? Let's go with the goatee. You know what? I got a golf game. Throw this around Florida. It'll fit in. Hey, I'm from Florida. I don't think God plays golf. I didn't like some of those jokes.
That was Jim Gaffigan with part of a piece called I'm a Manatee, taken from his album Doing My Time. Now let's move to my brief conversation with 16-year-old Kerrigan Lane about her petition to have a division of the USDA investigate and potentially close the Baton Rouge Zoo, where 21 animals have died this year. Let's welcome Kerrigan Lane to Talk Animals. Good morning, Kerrigan.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for joining me on Talk Animals. I think I had to interrupt you at school to do so, right?
Yes, sir. But that's okay.
Okay, cool. Well, I hope your teachers will understand that this is a pretty good purpose. So, and I'm always excited to hear about and support a teenage activist. What other issues or causes have you been involved with before the petition?
Well, this is the first major cause that I've ever really spoken out about, but, like, small issues regarding the zoo, like, when the articles first started coming out, I had posted about it on my personal page and wrote about it a little bit, and it meant something dear to me, so I decided to start the petition.
And so when you say it's something dear to you, is the zoo important to you and your family, or what really kind of got to you about it?
Well, my family used to take me there when I was a child, and I used to look at all the animals, and I'd be so happy to go there, and we'd take family trips there all the time. And when I started to see that the zoo appeared to be going down a little bit, it kind of struck me and saddened me, so I decided to be sad about it.
Cool. So that's kind of what prompted you to create the petition that has now gotten so much response.
Yes, sir.
What's been your reaction to the reaction that the petition has generated? I mean, I think as of last count, when I looked last night, I think it was over 140,000 signatures that the petition had gathered. And I think you were aiming for 150,000. So that's good on both levels. Were you expecting this kind of response?
I'm going to be honest. I wasn't expecting that many people to sign it. I was expecting a few hundred and maybe a people, you know, people from my personal life. But when I saw that it had that many signatures, I'm still in shock from it, honestly.
Yeah. And if you had to kind of guess, why do you think it did generate such response, especially so much more than what you kind of first expected yourself?
Well, I think people are concerned because animals are becoming a little more subjected to different things, like being put in zoos that aren't necessarily stable enough for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are trying to save the wildlife while they can. And the animals in captivity, if we're going to keep them in captivity, I think people think that we should take the best care that we can of them.
Well, and also, I think it's pretty striking, no matter what kind of reputation a zoo has, and leaving aside for a moment what people may think about zoos just inherently, that 21 animals have died at this zoo this year. I mean, that just seems like a shocking figure.
Oh, it is, definitely.
And so, based on how that response has gone to your petition, has there been any kind of indication of how the USDA or the APHIS division of the USDA, where your petition is really aimed, how they might act, what they might do in response to the petition?
I think they might do a little bit more than they normally would, considering the amount of people that have signed it.
Yeah.
And considering the number of animals that have died. So I'm very hopeful that they'll do something to kind of try to help the zoo out or help the animals out in finding out what they can do to make sure that the environment for the animals is safe and healthy. So
to at least try to improve conditions. So you're not necessarily pushing for them or hoping that they will decide to close the zoo then?
No, sir.
Okay.
I've seen on some websites that does say that. That information is false. I am simply asking that USDA APHIS goes down there and they overview the zoo and see what they can do to improve it. And if they find that there are just a massive number of regulations and stuff that aren't being followed, then the zoo should be closed. But if they can prevent that at all costs, that would really be good.
So what you're really seeking is, hey, maybe they need some help improving the conditions or a little bit of oversight, and let's get things better there. But let's definitely not close the zoo down.
Yes, sir.
That's great. Well, and I think your original goal, or maybe this was set by the petition format, was 150,000. I think you're well on your way to that. And I should mention that before I went on the air on the Talk Animals radio show Facebook page, on my personal Facebook page, and on one of the radio station, WMNF, bulletin board Facebook page, I mentioned some of the stuff that was happening in today's show and included the link to your petition. So I hope people listening who feel this is an important issue, as we all do, will be inclined to maybe go to that petition and add their signatures as well. So Kerrigan, thank you so much for taking a real interest in actually doing something that obviously has had some tangible results and some dramatic results, really, with the number of signatures. And we'll kind of keep an eye out to see what the USDA and APHIS does, and hope that the actions that you're seeking is exactly what they decide to do.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. 16-year-old Kerrigan Lane doing good work. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, it's time for at least an abbreviated version of animal news and announcements. Whatever else we may have time for, I do feel compelled to talk for a moment about Darlin's Darlins. That's a rescue facility in Polk City. You may have heard about it, read about it in the news. The owners of that facility were arrested and charged with 138 counts of animal neglect and 3 counts of felony animal abuse for the inhumane conditions at their farm. And so Darlin of Darlin's Darlin has been a guest on this show once for a full-length interview, and then I think 4 or 5 years ago, and then a couple years ago, a short interview like the one we just did with Kerrigan, where they were trying to get a new well and had a GoFundMe campaign to raise the monies for that. And I've seen Darlin at a lot of veg fests and always been very nice, and always interestingly invited me and my family to come visit anytime we could get over from the other side of the state where we live. So anyway, I have to say, really quite shocked and upset by this news. And basically what happened is PETA received a tip, I guess earlier in the summer, about the conditions at the ranch, and then had some volunteers that were there. They armed with undercover cameras, and the footage is pretty shocking, and the conditions there were pretty shocking. And sometimes I think, once again, we see where really good people, well-intentioned people, which is still what I, until I know more, like to think applies to Darlin, just get in over their head and don't have the money or resources for veterinary care and other things of animals. So anyway, more about that perhaps in a future show. So we have just about to reach the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. I think we're going to skip Name That Animal Tune today and save it for next week. But next week we will have a really cool, interesting guest named Dr. Lisa Kemmerer, professor of philosophy and religions at Montana State University of Billings, who's written or edited numerous books, including Bear Necessities, Rescue, Rehabilitation, Sanctuary, and Advocacy, a collection of essays and other pieces examining and celebrating bears across the world. So we'll do that next Wednesday on Talk Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon Clearwater Largo, Weeki Watch, and beyond. We'll see you next Wednesday on Talking Animals. Thanks.